Now, Greece, as you know, has done a deal on its enormous debt burden. So why can't we? European finance ministers have agreed to cut the rates on Greece's bailout loans, suspend interest payments for 10 years, extend the terms of the loans to 30 years. Economist David McWilliams, author of a new book, The Good Room, is with me now. He argues in the Irish Independent today that we should get at least some of the same treatment. We're also joined by Pascal Donoghue, who is the vice chair of the Oireachtas Committee on European Affairs and Fine Gael TD for Dublin Central. Good morning to you both. David, a default, they're not calling it that.
No, they're calling it a deal, but it's a default. When a country misses its payments and says we're not going to pay or we can't pay, then it's a default in everything but name. And this is the third Greek default in the last 18 months. And what it shows you really, and this is the key thing, is two things. One is when a country cannot pay, it won't pay. That's the first thing. And the second thing is it also shows you a dramatic move on the part of the European institutions, the Troika, the ECB and the EU, away from, just think of the language. This time 2 years ago, there was going to be no default, nothing would be tolerated. Now they have realised that A, the Greek people can't pay, B, the creditors have to take some of the pain because, after all, they lent money to Greece in the good times. Now times are not so good and Greece can't pay. And C, and I think very interestingly for ourselves, we are European presidents in the next 6 months. We hold the presidency. Mm-hmm. We can set the agenda. The whole role of being the EU president is you set the agenda. You actually say, we are going to discuss this, this and this. And this gives us a huge opportunity to bring forward our own deal. Simply put, if, and I'm not arguing that we should follow Greece, or I'm not arguing that Greece is the model, I'm just arguing that the Greek deal reflects realpolitik. Now, Mr. Draghi is a key man in all this, Pat. This time last year, Trichet was the boss in the ECB, the French bureaucrat. He's been replaced by Draghi. Draghi has printed 1 trillion euros this year to save Spain and Italy. This is a man who is doing deals.
This is the guy who's prepared to buy up all the bonds.
He's buying up all the bonds. He's prepared to use the central bank balance sheet. What he is saying, in effect, to the Germans, and they are tacitly going along with them because Merkel wouldn't allow this happen if she wasn't going along with it, is that we are in the process of doing deals all over the periphery to stop this. We had a deal in Greece. We had a deal in June the 28th with Spain and Italy, and to a degree ourselves. We had a deal with Greece in March. What you have is a total change at the top in Europe. And I believe this gives us a huge opportunity to revisit our own debt, particularly the promissory note, which I know we'll talk about in a couple of minutes, which we really, I mean, really and truly, the promissory note is something that doesn't have to be paid at the pace it's paying now, simply because it's a relationship between our central bank and our government.
It just goes round and round.
It's a round and round. It's,
I mean, they printed the money in order to pay Anglo. We have to pay back them for printing the money, and then the money is destroyed.
The money's destroyed. It's deleted. Yeah. It's deleted. So this
so
is
if it takes us 400 years or 200 years or 20 years to pay it back, as long as it gets paid back, no principle is being breached.
Precisely. And we should pay this at the rate at which it suits us. And the Europeans, the ECB, what we sometimes don't realise is they need a win in Ireland. They have put so much store into Ireland being the model. And it's not the model for Greece. Greece is a different kettle of fish. It's the model for Spain and Italy. These are the two big countries. So the Europeans are desperate to do something in Ireland which shows the world that they have a success. And we should be acting because this is our opportunity.
Meghan Green last night said, you know, maybe we're going the wrong way about getting deals. You know, we are actually saying we are the poster boy. We're doing very well, thank you. We're well on the way to getting back into the bond market. Maybe the best thing is pictures of people begging on the streets, the soup kitchen opening in Athlone, those kind of images, the big trade union protest last weekend. Those are the kind of images we should be bringing to Europe with us, because on that basis we might get a deal. We won't get a deal by being the good boy.
I believe that we have to look at what's happening in the economy. And what is happening in the economy is austerity is drying the economy up of demand. There is no demand. And it's from the basic idea, Pat, which is that when you strip everything back in economics, my spending is your income.
Yeah.
And your spending is my income. And if nobody is spending because there is too much debt, we don't have income. and the income falls. Now, think about it. All these targets are debt expressed as a percentage of income. So if your income is falling or stagnant, your debt is rising.
If you think of it in much more, folk-friendly terms, you've got the person in pennies, for example, who's at the checkout, and that person gets paid. And out of that money, they go to the hairdressers. And they get their hair done, and then the hairdresser uses that money to go into pennies to buy a shirt.
Yes.
And this, so it goes.
This is how the economy works. Everybody's spending is everybody else's income. And everybody else's income gives the potential to spend and generate more income for other people. This is how money circulates around.
You make the point that a saving on an individual basis makes a lot of sense for the individual. If they have spare cash, they save it, they save for the rainy day. However, if everybody saves, there's no money in the economy.
The best way to look at this is imagine you're going to the theatre, right? Or you're at a soccer match, right? And the fella in front of you stands up to get a better view for himself. Then you have to stand up. Then the fella behind you has to stand up. Then the girl behind you has to stand up. So the very act of improving one individual makes us all worse off. And that is the dilemma of savings, which is what Keynes pointed out in the Great Recession of the 1930s. And ultimately, this is where we are at. And the Europeans understand this. And what you see, Germany's plan, and Germany, the reason Germany's become really flexible, is that Germany had a plan, and their plan was that we'd all turn into little Germans in the euro. And that hasn't happened. I can quote the great, you know, American economist Mike Tyson on this, you know, that everybody has a plan, he said, until you get a punch in the face. And the punch in the face for Germany is the fact that that plan hasn't worked. And they're going back to the drawing board. They have an election coming up. The German economy and the German boom was simply a reflection, again, of us buying German stuff in the last 10 years. Now, the German economy, manufacturing production in Germany, is faltering. So everybody has their own interests in a deal.
As some of the comments coming in, the Greeks may have got a deal on their debt, but they don't have a little gold-plated statue that says European of the Year. And the Greek Prime Minister won't be able to show his grandchildren his photo on the cover of Time. Our government just has different priorities than the Greek government does.
Well, this is, I will come back to this title, the good room. You know, this is based on my granny having a good room that was so good, I wasn't good enough to go into it. It was kept for people. You probably is something similar.
Yeah,
it was people who were better than us. And I remember at the time my granny behaving different, like when the local priest or the local doctor came in. And I sometimes believe that when we go in to negotiate, we have this sort of good room mentality, that rather was by saying, listen, this promissory note is stupid. We are taking 3.1 billion euros of real tax money out of the economy. We are then burning that money the following day. We could project this out 400-500 years if we wanted, take much less out, and still, as you say, go by the principle of repayment.
That we are not defaulting on these.
We're not defaulting.
But we're taking our time.
We're taking our time, and frankly, time is all we have. And that's the argument you put.
Before I talk to Pascal about this, the budgetary arithmetic, and I mean, we're going to have, after this budget, two more contracting budgets. But still, if you don't have to find 3.1 billion, instead you might have to, let's be generous with our drip system and say we have to only find a billion a year. That gives you 2.1 billion. Extra.
Pat, the billion is also too big a figure.
Okay, well, pick whatever figure you like.
You could say we are going to pay 100 million, 50 million, whatever we can afford. And you know what? We are going to do it on our terms because it's our money, our central bank, and we have decided this is what we're going to do. This is the magic of
Then we had an extra 2.5 billion.
It changes
everything.
Well, the whole point is you've got to come back to the austerity problem. If everybody's saving and the government is slashing, who is spending? And if nobody is spending, then the economy gets weaker. And all you see in this country is unemployment and emigration. That is the net result of this policy. And we see it every single day. So the Europeans, the key thing is the Europeans have indicated that they are open to a deal. We have the presidency of Europe next year. So we set the agenda for 6 months. It's a golden opportunity. And I believe that if the state doesn't do this, it is responding to something that I can't understand as a citizen of this country, which is, as you say, the concerns and the respectability of others. Because the financial markets, now look, the interesting thing about financial markets, they want a country like Ireland to succeed. And the way you cure a country with a broken balance sheet as we have is by less debt, not more debt. These are the basic things of economics.
Pascal, you've been listening to all of this. You're vice chair of the European Affairs Committee. Is there anything in what David has said that doesn't make absolute horse sense?
No, an awful lot of what he said there makes perfect sense. And if I could just make two broad points in relation to it. The first point that is very welcome is that for many years we have understandably heard people argue that the euro is doomed to break up, that we're facing economic catastrophe across the continent of Europe because the European Central Bank is unwilling to act as a proper central bank, as a lender of last resort, and because governments across Europe are unwilling to be imaginative and move away from the orthodoxy that was causing dreadful human difficulty in countries like our own. And I just want to welcome the fact that we hear informed voices like David now acknowledge the fact that within the European Central Bank in particular, they're now acting like the kind of central bank that we need in order to ensure that not only does the euro stay intact, but that it flourishes. Yeah. And that's an essential change that we've seen happen. Okay, and if I could just make one point just yes. in relation to what's happened in Greece and the parallel here for Ireland. We need to be clear here that for Greece, both of you talked about the analogy, which is vital in all of this, for the amount of debt that a country has versus the amount of income that it's generating and the point at which that becomes unsustainable. In 10 years' time, the Greek debt-to-national income ratio will still be worse than we are next year. And in return for that deal, what they've put in place is intensified and stronger austerity measures. So we need to acknowledge in all of this that, for example, within Greece, people's tax-free credits have been cut from €12,000 to €5,000. Public pensions in Ireland have been on average cut by 4%. In Greece, they've been cut by 20%.
What's your message? That you think you know austerity? You haven't seen the half of it, is that it?
Absolutely not.
That's what you're saying, that the Greeks are much harder pressed than we are.
No, people in Ireland have undergone an economic and social trauma with the amount of budgetary cutbacks we've taken, with the amount of public spending cuts that we've had to endure as well. I'm simply making the point here that as we look at what Greece is now experiencing, they're still in a worse place in 10 years' time versus where we are now. And there's also a cost to the deal that they've taken. And what we have to do now, and this is where I do agree with much of what David has said here, is there is now the commitment was made in June to keep the euro, to pay a price for it surviving and flourishing within the future. We saw the first signal of that in the June European Council meeting that we've discussed with you in the past regarding breaking the link between sovereign and national debt. And we have now seen a continuation of that in relation to what's now happened in Greece. And within that environment, what the government will do and is determined to do is put in place measures in the future that ensure that our national debt is sustainable, and in particular the banking portion of our national debt is sustainable.
Okay, now let's talk about the two elements, the promissory notes. Quoting from the Taoiseach yesterday, it is the intention of the Minister for Finance on behalf of the government not to have to pay the €3 billion that's due in March 2013.
Yes.
Okay, so is that a given at this point? We're not going to pay this?
No, it's our negotiation objective.
Now, hang on. This has been going on forever and forever and forever. We have a promise on foot of the expert review group on abortion that we'll have an indication by December, before you go into recess, as to what your intention is. Like, when you want to move quickly, you can move quickly. Here, this one is just crawling at a snail's pace.
Well, could I just make two points in relation to that? The first one is, I think in the past, other commentators have been justifiably critical of the government not saying what our negotiation objective is. And what we're saying here is our objective is to ensure that we're not making that full payment, and we're making it in the future in a way that's affordable and sustainable for our country.
Yeah, but why not just do it? I mean, you're not defaulting. You can understand the markets and the ECB and everybody being worried about default, but within the framework of this circular arrangement between the Irish Central Bank and the government and the taxpayer, why not just unilaterally say we're paying this over 70 years?
Well, of course, that was the second point I was going to make there, just to look at the analogy that you drew there between the process in relation to the X case and where we are now. Of course, the gigantic difference, the decisive difference between both scenarios is in relation to promissory notes. We have a third party at play here, which is decisive in relation to this, which is the European Central Bank. The European Central Bank that's funding the banks which we have our deposits and savings within, and the European Central Bank that's funding, making a contribution to funding our budget deficit. And if you look at the particular point there that you're making there in relation to unilateral action, and this is a point that many have urged the government to take on across the last couple of years, and have cited the example of Argentina in relation to this, and the fact that they took unilateral action in 2001 and 2002. You know, I don't hear the same people talking about Argentina now, when a court in New York ruled last week that they had to repay back debtors as a result of taking unilawful action.
Pascal, this is to ourselves. Who's going to sue whom? Like, is this the Irish Central Bank going to sue the Irish government in the Irish courts to say, we don't want this money paid over 70 years, we want it paid over 10, as was the original agreement? I mean, to say that we could all end up in the courts over this is a nonsense.
Well, it's not a nonsense because...
Well, who's going to take us to court?
Well, Pat, I'm just making the point that this is what happened to Argentina last week, a case they lost. They now have to repay back money as a result of unilateral action.
But who's going to take us? Is it you think the ECB will come into the Irish courts intervening on behalf of whom? On behalf of the Central Bank? On behalf...
Which we are a shareholder of.
I'm simply making the point here that when we're in a situation here of having to fund our public services like we are and our banking system like we are, there's real risks to unilateral action. And I'm responding to the very fair point that you made, which is, well, you know, what is the downside of unilateral action? I'm saying, if you look at where we are now overall, we still have an unacceptable level of unemployment within our economy. We still have our economy not growing at the rate we want it to make. On the other side, if you look at the rate of interest in our debt at the moment, were we to borrow at the moment, a year ago it was been around 20%. Less 6 to 9 months ago it was around 14%. It's now at 5%. And what we have to do is we have to pursue a tough negotiation approach, recognising the fact that there are other people at the table who we have to deal with.
Can I just make a point on Pascal's point? If Pascal's logic was right, Greece would have, over the last 12 months, been cut off by ECB funding because Greece has defaulted three times. What you see is the ECB's position is of the central bank of the Eurozone. It has to continue to support countries in the Eurozone, irrespective of whether they act unilaterally or not. And what we see, the answer to the threat that the ECB would disappear is the fact that this morning, if a Greek person puts his credit card into an ATM machine, he will get euros out because the ECB will not countenance a failure on its watch. So ultimately, we know what's happening. You know what they say in poker matches, you know, you've 2 minutes to figure out who the fool is. And if you haven't figured out the fool, after 2 minutes, the fool is you. Now, ultimately, we are in this sort of game. I think Pascal is right in the sense that there is some merit in going slowly initially. But we've been going slowly for a long, long time. We don't seem to be getting any credence. We don't seem to get any deals. And I think that ultimately people are totally fed up with the inactivity. The average Irish citizen feels completely disempowered. You know, you listen to this and it's going slowly. And we know that there are 3 billion reasons not to pay the promissory note at the rate at which we're paying. We know the ECB has changed. We know Germany wants a deal. We know our position is strong, not weak. And we have to do that deal and we have the opportunity to do it now.
Okay, the reservation is, David. I want to put this reservation to David. We effectively printed money to sort and develop this promissory note scheme. And it was a bit of a trick of the loop.
It wasn't a trick of the loop. This is what central banks do. You see, this is the interesting thing. You've actually changed the whole debate. What central banks do, and I speak as a former central banker, in a crisis, is they come in as the lender of last resort, whether it's the government or the banking system. This is not a trick. This is what the Fed is doing right now. The Bank of England is doing right now. The Bank of Japan is doing right now.
Suppose the Greeks decided we're going to print loads and loads of euros and we'll give it to ourselves over 200 years.
Which is what they're doing. Which is actually what they're doing by not paying back the money now. This is actually what they're doing. Draghi understands what is going on. He understands the risks. He's very different to Trichet. He's already printed 1 trillion. I give you a sense how big 1 trillion is. If you were to go out and spend 1 million euros a day, it would take you 2,740 years to spend the trillion that Draghi has printed in the last 8 months to provide sustenance and cover for Spain and Italy. This is going on. Let's get real.
Pat, we are getting real in relation to this, but let me put a scenario in relation to this here. Let's say Ireland had done a deal a number of months ago in relation to promissory notes, and what we saw happen in Greece now happened. There's no doubt at all that as a result of the Greek situation and how that has unfolded, that has opened up options and opened up a new environment which Ireland has to take advantage of. And so much of this is about timing and about when we can come up with the best deal for our country. As a public representative, like, I am keenly aware of how people feel about this. I'm keenly aware of the huge damage that's been done to morale in our country as a result of what's happening to the promissory notes and the impact it's having on people. But this government is determined to find a way of taking this yoke off our back and coming up with a plan for dealing with this that is sustainable. And what's happened in Greece, which many, many people said would never happen, the same people that were saying that the euro was going to break up, is showing that there is an imagination now across Europe to dealing with this. Ireland has contributed to that, and we will ensure with that in that environment we can get the best deal for our country.
David.
I think what we should do as citizens is, in parallel with the government making its moves, we should set up something like an online petition to say, and get 1 million signatures to say, no, on the 31st of March, we will not pay this. And this, I think, will focus the minds, because the thing about being in debt, Pat, is time isn't on your side. This is the key thing. When you're in debt and your debt is rising, time is your enemy, not your friend. And that's why you need to do a deal right now.
I think we're keenly aware of what the deadline is here. The real deadline is the 31st of March. It's when the next repayment is due. What we know, and David has acknowledged this in fairness here, is that for Ireland to exit our bailout programme, we need to do it in a sustainable and successful manner. We need to wave goodbye to the IMF and ECB out of our country with no prospect of them coming back. The main way in which this can be done, which I believe there is a degree of consensus about, is coming up with a plan in relation to our banking debt. Yeah. And essential to that,
the real deadline, from your point of view, politically, Pascal, the real deadline is next week and budget day. Because if you didn't have to factor in the 3.1 to be found for March, the budgetary arithmetic would be very different.
Yeah, well, that is a political reality.
Yeah, and you're going to have to hammer people next week that you wouldn't have to hammer otherwise if you'd secured this deal by budget day. So that's the reality.
Well, the deadline is, when does the money leave our country? When
but the thing
money
is,
which
it doesn't leave the country.
Can I just make this
it doesn't
point?
Leave. It's paid to our central bank, and then it's destroyed.
Sure. The deadline is when money that could be spent on public services has to go to the central bank to honour this agreement. That's the real deadline. And what we have seen happen now is an improvement in the environment in which this can be dealt with. But it's still a demanding and tough negotiation, which ultimately I believe we will succeed in.
All right, last words from you, David.
You could do this in the morning. It would make no difference. It would save a huge amount of money. And morally, it would be the right thing to do.
All right, we leave it there. Pascal Donoghue, Fine Gael TD for Dublin Central and Vice Chair of the European Affairs Committee, and economist David McWilliams, and author of the new book, The Good Room. Thank you both very much for joining us. It's 10:30.